Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. We've got a great lineup for you today. Andronika Morris, Executive Director for Housing NOLA, joins us. We'll talk about HB 800. This is the proposition for the Constitutional Convention in order to rewrite our state constitution. We're going to get a number of folks' feelings and opinions on whether or not this is a good idea or not. And we'll also visit with J.P. Morrell. We'll ask him in a 12 o'clock hour about that and a number of other issues that the city's facing at the present time. Also, we have Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. in the 11 o'clock hour, and we'll visit with Chris Massengill, the St. Tammany Core group, and we'll talk about two projects over in St. Tammany Parish that are great news to the area. But we'll talk to Michael as well about this constitutional convention notion. I have a few comments that I'll make in the 10:30 segment as well. This seems to be moving fast through this state legislature, and I've said this before and I'll say it again. People need to be worried about what ultimately is going to happen here. And they need to get involved, and they need to ask questions. We're just over 30 days from where they want to start this convention process, and there is not a complete agenda laid out. We have former legislators making some really mystifying comments about why people should be worried about this, which doesn't make any sense to me, and we'll point those out at 10:30. Joining us right now is Farima Mamugani, Assistant Professor, Tulane University, A.B. Freeman School of Business. This is, you know, we talk a lot about green energy and what's happening in emerging technologies. This particular technology that we're about to talk about is very, very interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. Farima, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
Thank you for inviting me. Actually, I'm so happy today to talk about this new technology, and I'm so excited to just share what I know and just have a conversation about it.
So I read a number of articles about this, very similar to some other technologies, but this is really kind of strange, just using gravity with gigantic bricks that are packed full of compressed dirt. Tell us about how this technology works and what it hopes to accomplish.
Actually, this is a very cool idea, and the idea is very simple. By lifting the massive bricks to the facility's upper level during the period of the excess renewable energy production, the facility cranes can store the large amount of the power and energy and release it by lowering them back down when the demand is high and the energy supply is low. And this is how it works. And then, for example, if someone, they have towers, they can use that buildings, or sometimes they are building the some facilities for this reason. But this is how it works. And these bricks build up with some dirt, which is very good. We are just using whatever leftovers in the earth to just build these bricks, and then use them to store the energy and use it whenever we need.
So how does this work? So the brick actually is goes down from the top of a building, and as a result of that pressure, it spins some kind of electric generator that actually is producing energy. Is that correct?
Exactly. This is
so we're using the gravity, we're using the weight of the brick. It's moving at a very slow pace, and gravity fed, and that pressure is what's actually spinning the generator.
Exactly. This is how it works, actually. Yeah, go ahead.
No, ma'am. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that, yes, we are using this pressure to just when it's lowering down back, and then what I learned from what I was doing research, every 6 feet that just they are lowering them back is just creating, I think, around 1 megawatt energy for us. And this vessel is very huge and giant, and then when it's just coming down, generates the energy for us.
So what this, it seems as though this is kind of a continuum, right? I mean, you have solar, you have wind. This technology is, in its early onset, is kind of backfilling the fact that if we just look at solar is not working at night. So there's a number of dark hours during the day. This type of technology would backfill and would help store and provide energy real time to the grid or to a particular facility to backfill their energy demand needs when the other technologies are not actually producing energy. Would that be correct? Is that my understanding?
Yes, exactly. Right now, in the current situation that we are in the market, running a wind or the solar farm is now cheaper than any old coal plants or the natural gas. But the economics of the storing energy is still an issue for us. But if you can find a way to just store the energy, in this case, this combined technology together, the renewable and this technology, I'm just calling it the gravity storage technology, it can help us to just provide us an electricity whenever we need, whenever we are not able to generate. For example, when it comes to night, we are not able to use the renewable energy, or if not windy, we are not able to generate the renewable energy. But if we are able to store it, in this case, we can use it when we need that electricity.
And we don't really need to, there's not really a necessity in some cases to actually store the energy. You're providing it real time, right? Because part of the problem with storing energy is finding the appropriate batteries that are going to be able to store. They have a life cycle. The more you re-energize these batteries or recharge these batteries, the quicker their life cycle diminishes, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, actually, this is a good point. One problem with the batteries is that right now, you know, the cost of the batteries continue to fall and just is getting better and better each year. But the one problem with the batteries is that their lifetime is on average around 15 years. And the more you use, similar to the maybe the batteries that we have with our cell phones, then we see that after a few years, we are not we have problem with our cell phone and we are changing them because the battery is not charging or just staining for a long time. The same thing happened with the other batteries as well. But this solution, the gravity storage solution, they claim that at least they can stay for 35 years. And if this is how it works, it's a very great news because consider the 15 years compared to 35 years, which is the big improvement.
So this technology, I guess, if I had to point to one that's out there right now that works very similar in nature, would be hydroelectric power, would it not?
Exactly, yes. And because I was just saying that idea is simple, the same way that they were using the water, and then when the water is just the pressure of the water, it was generating the electricity. The same thing happening here. Right now, we are using the gravity to just, and the pressure, and when it's just coming down, all of these bricks, when they are just coming down, they are generating the electricity. The similar, I think the idea is similar, but we are using the different thing in our Earth to just generate the electricity.
So the models that are out there right now, there are a couple of different countries that are testing this technology, China being one of them. Mm-hmm. I think here in the United States and in a couple of other countries. Early onset, what are the results that we are seeing?
Actually, this technology is very new, and maybe from 2019, they just started just doing some sort of pilot. And right now, they are just doing in Texas and Shanghai. And actually, this year is a critical year to just know that if it is in terms of economy, is just is beneficial to just have this sort of technology and just combine it with other technology that we have. But based on actually what they claim, that right now in the, I think, Shanghai, they are building the around 100 megawatts. And still is working, but their pilot, it was 5 megawatts, and it was just successful. But right now, what they are doing in the Shanghai is 100 megawatts, and they are planning to just have a larger facilities with a larger amount of generations. And still, they haven't disclosed about that the cost right now, but we are just waiting to see that how it works.
And so the system that moves the elevator system that moves the bricks from the top of the building from the bottom of the building, once they descend and they create that that pressure to spin that generator, it's actually enough to generate power to run the elevator system and to also increase over and above that the amount of power that's being generated. So it's kind of self-serving, right? It reproduces itself and doesn't need any outside energy sources to actually exist.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. They are just using the renewable energy to just raise to the top, and then when it's just lowering them back, it generates electricity, and then everything is just coming from the renewable energy, nothing from the outside or just the other source of energy.
It's going to be interesting to see where this ultimately ends up, right? To me it makes perfect sense because the cost of the material. I mean, I guess the most expensive thing is the elevator system and the skin of the building, the structure of the building, right?
Yeah, actually, yes, you're right. And I think this technology is great when we are just trying to consider for a longer period or just we are looking for the huge setups. In this case, if you are just considering the cost of the tower or any other sort of the cranes, when we are just considering 35 years, it makes sense. The levelized cost makes sense. But if you're considering for maybe short period or just the setup is small, in this case, the amount of the capital cost in the front, upfront, that we have to pay is too much, and it doesn't make sense. And I think if I want to just put it in this way, if this technology can be combined with the batteries, it should be a very great solution. The batteries could be the solution for a short period, for a small setup, and this gravity storage, they could be the answer for a longer period and maybe a large setup that we have. In this case, the cost, it makes sense. Otherwise, the upfront cost right now is very high for this sort of technology.
Interesting, though, it doesn't take the land mass that either solar or wind requires, right? You could actually put these buildings up almost anywhere, next to a transmission corridor or otherwise, because the footprint is relatively small.
Exactly. And this is another advantage of this, actually, type of technology. We don't need to have a large land to just build it. Even the small lands just can help us to just build and just use this technology. This is another advantage of this type of system.
Yeah. Look, I look forward. We'll have you back on in the coming months as this we go through the maturation process of this technology. Obviously, it seems as though there's a lot of interest in and around this at the present time, as with a number of other alternative sources, too. Do you think that, for instance, if you have like a major factory operation, that you may see companies thinking about developing this type of technology, building these buildings, and utilizing this as their sole source for power in many respects. Do you think this technology could get there?
Actually, this is an interesting question. I think the story of this technology, this is my intuition, I think this is my guess, it should be similar to the microgrid. Right now, maybe you heard about that in the news, that some big companies such as Amazon, Google, Facebook, they're just trying to have a contract with some generators or the microgrid owners to just generate their own energies and to just have a land for themselves. And I think the path for this technology should be similar. When it makes economically sense, the big companies and the large facilities, they will reach out and they will adopt this technology, definitely. Because always, this is how we see the technologies work. The same story was with the microgrid, it was with the other generators, but right now, when it's just getting better and better, the technology is improving, the cost of technology because of the mass production is decreasing, and then we will see that at least the big organization, big companies, they're adopting these technologies. And I see that, you know, maybe 10 years or 5 years, we will see that some large organization, even universities, hospitals, they will just use these energies. Why not?
Yeah, you know, when you think about remote facilities, for example, that have energy needs, and you look at utilities and the cost of them to provide transmission lines and otherwise to these locations geographically. I mean, they're not as many now as they were 100 years ago, but this technology to me would make perfect sense because you eliminate a lot of the need for significant investment in infrastructure if you could co-generate your own power right there for the most part.
Yes, actually, this is a great point. The transmission line cost is not cheap, and this is the one main reason that maybe this right now the electricity price is high.
Yeah.
And if you can generate locally and use locally, okay, we can build a sustainable environment for us. This is the point right now.
Absolutely. Very exciting technology. Thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
That's Fariba Mamugani, Assistant Professor, Tulane University, A.B. Freeman School of Business. Gravity, these gigantic bricks packed full of compressed dirt as big as a pickup truck and five times heavier are a potentially important solution to this critical problem with green energy revolution. You can read about it there. It's all over the internet, what's going on with this particular technology. Very interesting reading. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries, so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, folks, yesterday we talked about Harvard University bringing back the SAT and the ACT. They seem to be at top of the news across the country on so many different fronts. It's actually kind of scary, right? This is supposed to be one of the premier educational institutions in this country. And it seems as though they are replete with controversy after controversy after controversy. There seems to be a growing number of universities that are now and continue to, and they're doubling down on offering segregated graduations. In light of the recent Supreme Court decision relative to affirmative action, it seems as though universities are being really creative in how they deal with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And they're certainly doubling down on these segregated graduations. They're called affinity graduations, where they say that marginalized communities get to express their cultures freely. They point out that these gatherings, which have expanded from black students in the early 70s to include an ever-growing list of marginalized identities, they're optional and they're open to everyone. I thought a graduation was to celebrate your educational experience, and that's the culmination of moving on, a passage, a rite of passage from advanced education to whatever the next stop in life is for you, not to celebrate one's culture. I didn't realize that graduation ceremony was about culture as opposed to accomplishment. Of course not, because the reality is that means that you would be celebrating meritocracy, right? Merit. This is about equal opportunity, not guaranteed outcomes. And we continue to go down this path. In fact, Omokongo Dibinga, professor of intercultural communications affiliated with the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University, says that every space in America where non-white people seek to gather or even advance themselves is being challenged in the wake of the Supreme Court's action to end affirmative action. Well, that's not necessarily true. We continue to say that. The only problem is that when the advancement of you works to the detriment or there's a cost to others. So we promote racism to defeat racism. And because that is an altruistic thought by many, it's okay. We're free to do that. They go on and say that there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents people choosing to gather with members of their own community, adding the professor, this professor who says they have spoken at affinity graduations. It is a travesty that there is a push to stop people from celebrating themselves. Again, I did not understand that we are celebrating culture as opposed to accomplishments. And we seem to have lost sight of what the advanced educational experience is all about. Now we have gathering centers, student centers for all kinds of ethnic groups, racial groups. The list goes on and on. Sexual preferences, and that list is growing and growing and growing. And in public universities, it's interesting because they expect the public, you, the taxpayers, to fund this, to fund their celebration of themselves. It's a ridiculous expectation. It should simply be the celebration of the accomplishment. That's what the university is there for, to educate students. And when you've reached and achieved the minimum requirements of that university, you get what? A diploma. Plain and simple. Gail Harriott, a University of San Diego law professor and independent member of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, says that affinity graduations have become very popular, in part because they help promote a particular narrative that one is a member of either a struggling, oppressed minority or the monolithic, privileged majority. But she's quick to point out there are many ways in which this view doesn't actually fit reality. Why don't we just go look at the graduating class at Harvard? And what you're going to find is that non-Hispanic whites are not the majority in the Harvard class. So who's privileged and who's not? Who's oppressed and who's not? So they can't even look to the makeup of their own classes to recognize They're not in the in the minority. They are the majority. And as a result of this, they say they're on dubious legal standing as it relates to Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Very interesting as to, you know, where this all goes. In fact, Harvard, as you well know, is now looking for a new president. The last president, Claudine Gay, had a checkered academic past. It seems as though she plagiarized a whole lot. She was really big into DEI, and so Harvard is doubling down on this, and they have tapped an ex-McKinsey consultant who has criticized meritocracy to help select the university's next president. She has argued that a meritocratic policy of treating people evenly, it ain't good enough, because that allows bias that is in our systems to perpetuate. And of course, the oppressors, whites, are the only ones that have bias. All other ethnic groups and racial groups, they can't have it. It doesn't exist. So say she, right? Again, defeat racism by promoting racism. Meritocracy is not good enough. It seems as though there has to be a greater good that's out there, as though we're going to defeat bias. Everyone has some kind of bias. Some people like blondes. Some people like brunettes. Some people like tall people, short people, medium-sized people, rotund people, thin people, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And it doesn't have to have anything to do with race. This whole notion of implicit bias. Of course, the oppressor community is the only one capable of saying. No one else is. And it seems as though that Harvard University, and not to just pick on Harvard, but as I said, there's like multiple stories going on here. It seems as though they should offer an undergraduate degree in plagiarism. Because it seems to run through every part of Harvard. In fact, a Harvard Medical School professor was just chastised by a judge for massively plagiarizing a report in a lawsuit against Lockheed Martin. U.S. District Court Judge Roy Dalton granted a motion to toss out Deepak Panigrahi's 500-page report accusing the weapons manufacturer of releasing toxic chemicals from an Orlando, Florida facility. It turns out that the report, according to the judge, is, put plainly, a mess. Indeed, the plagiarism is so ubiquitous throughout the report that it is frankly overwhelming to try to make heads or tails of just what Dr. Panigrahi's own work actually is. And during the course of the examination of this report, it turns out that he's citing reports that he hasn't even read in their entirety, and drawing conclusions based on these references that he makes to other people's work. This is becoming scarier, folks, as it relates to our higher education institutions in this country. And if we do not believe that we are going to fall behind emerging economies and emerging countries out there as it relates to our education, we are sadly mistaken. We better get a grip. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Let's go to the talk lines. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what say you?
No, I enjoy this discussion. I enjoy listening to you. I don't agree with you much, but I'm happy you're bringing it up. So I got a couple of questions for you, which may negate my ability to make a point afterward, but I got to ask. So in your world of meritocracy, should it have always been a meritocracy? Should we have never had affirmative action? It should always be you get your place in life in school based upon your ability. Was there ever a time for affirmative action?
Well, affirmative action to what extent?
Any extent. I mean, to what extent now? You're saying that we shouldn't have it at all now. And so I'm asking you, should we have ever had it? So here's my point, man. So let me ask you this. How many, well, you're a Jesuit grad, right?
Yep.
How many black people were in your graduating class at Jesuit?
Probably a representative amount of the number of blacks proportionately in the country. At that time, the numbers haven't changed over the last 30 years, 40 years. About 13% of the population is black. About 16%, about 6% are black males. We had roughly 200 students, which means that would be a dozen black males in our class would be representative of the country at that point in time. And I would say we probably had that.
Well, what about? I mean, yeah, but we're not in Kansas, man. I mean, we're in New Orleans, so you definitely didn't.
Well,
have
that's the point that I was trying to make earlier. To what extent? What number are we using? Are we going to go down to micro economy geographic areas? Let me finish, if we're in Kansas, then right, and there's a 90% representation. Of the white community, so they should be guaranteed 90% of everything, right?
Yeah, we're in New Orleans.
No, I'm asking you the question. So in Kansas, if the numbers are far greater than what the representation is in this country, then they should be entitled to more, right? Under your theory.
No, I'm not presenting that theory at all.
Of course not. I get it, and that's the point I'm asking. To what extent? At what point in time, when is it fair? When it works to the detriment of others, whether it be ethnic groups, racial groups, or others, especially if we want to talk about Hispanics. Why don't we talk about Hispanics? Nobody wants to talk about that because those numbers don't work well for them at all, not even close.
Well, back to the point that I know you want to make your points and skew the conversation.
But this is the point. I'm not skewing the conversation. You asked a legitimate question. I gave you a legitimate answer. You don't like the answer.
No, I don't. I don't because, even know what. So I asked you the question: what should we have ever had America?
And I'm saying to what? And I say, to what extent? What is the ultimate goal? Is it a guarantee of an outcome, or is it the guarantee of an opportunity? I thought that separate but equal went out. It seems as though now the only way that there can be a recognition of culture, of race, of ethnicity, and everything else is that these celebrations can only achieve that by doing it separately. Now, I got to imagine you are in favor of the elimination of that separate but equal doctrine, right?
Of course. But so here, look, can of I course, make
of
one
course.
Point, please?
So how do you react? How do you react to us revisiting this now? And that the only way that we can ultimately celebrate oneself, one's culture, is that we now are going to have separate housing, separate student centers, affinity graduations, and that everything is going to be separate. You can't possibly be in favor of that, right?
But it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist.
Of your imagination. Tell me a
really?
School where separate, where there's an African American only housing complex. It doesn't exist. So here, let me.
It does exist, and I'll pull it up, and I'll talk about it tomorrow. Student centers do exist. In fact, at Oberlin College, I've actually covered this on this show before. They do have separate student centers. And in fact, the moment in time that a white student went in there to study, they called him out, confronted him, and it was all over the newspaper, all over the media. You can read about it. Right now, Harvard, American, Columbia, Indiana University, Purdue, Penn State, and about a dozen other campuses are holding ceremonies for black graduates next month. Separate and apart from the general graduation ceremony. So don't tell me it's a figment of my imagination. I do the research.
You said housing. You said housing.
I said housing as well. Housing as well. Go Google it. It's easy. It's been reported all across, big-time media. I mean,
It's like transgender athletes. That gets reported all the time, too, and we passed a law on it in Louisiana, except it's a problem that doesn't exist. We've never had one, not even one transgender athlete. But, Newell, here
that's not
like
true.
To make this
that's,
point
that too. Is not true. That's not true. We are not looking for a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. That is not true. You're just not willing to admit it. I mean, there are example after example after example. I don't recall, but I'll go pull it up and I'll talk about that tomorrow as well.
Not one in Louisiana. Never has been, and not before that law was passed and not since. But if we did have one, or if we had two, or if we had five, we're really going to make a law that covers five people? But no, I want to make a bigger point, sir, and I'll let you go.
Well, no, but Rich, that is the point right there. So I was a competitive swimmer, and I worked hard from age five all through high school, sacrificed a lot in my life for competitive swimming. If I was a female and at some point in time, after about 10 or 12 years of the sacrifices that I made, of traveling around the country, competing in the hopes of going to the Olympics or otherwise, and then the rules change and I am now competing against a born male who claims now to be a female, I don't think that's fair. You nor anyone else is going to change my mind relative to that because I understand the physiological differences as it relates to that. And the fact of the matter is the difference between a premier swimmer and the next lowest level is 1 second. 1 second. So whether it's 1, 3, 5, 7, or 9, it's not fair to change the rules and have females competing against males. So is there a necessity for the protection? Absolutely. We'll be right back. Folks, if you're ready to go to the biggest jazz fest ever, experience the music, food, and culture of Louisiana, plus great artists like Chris Stapleton, John Batiste, The Killers, The Robert Cray Band, Heart, Rebirth, Brass Band, and more, listen to Tommy Tucker, me, Scoot, and Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest Password of the Day. Then go to WWL.com/contests and register to win a pair of tickets to the first weekend of Jazz Fest, plus round-trip Jazz Fest Express Shuttle Passes. Happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest, and WWL will be right back.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.